Hello, my name is Susan Piver and I'm founder of the Open Heart Project. I've been a Buddhist for over 25 years and a teacher for over 10. And we're going to practice meditation together at the end of this video. So I just want to introduce myself to anyone who I haven't met yet or people that I don't know. Hi, people I do know. Hi to you too. In this video, which is the second in a series of 8 videos on the Noble Eightfold Path, we're going to talk about step number 2 before we practice, which is called right intention. And the first step, which you don't have to go back and listen to, however, if you'd like to, I'll put the link in this email somewhere, is called right view. I always like to make sure my phone is turned off. Right view is the foundation. It's the starting point. If we don't see things clearly, then whatever we layer on to that moment, intention, speech, livelihood, action, effort, and so on, is going to be wonky, for lack of a better word. So everything begins with seeing clearly. And seeing clearly here means seeing what is before you attach a label to it or a judgment on it or a interpretation. That's very hard to do. We see something, we feel something, we immediately put a label onto it. And that's how we make our way in the world, and it's very necessary and a pragmatic thing to do. However, that doesn't change the reality that before our label and before our name, it was something in and of itself. And right view means noting that thing. It's hard. It goes against all our training and all our habitual thought patterns. Nonetheless, you can do it because you do it. You don't sit there and go, I'm going to dispose of all my judgments and labels and instead manifest right view. You're doing right view all the time anyway. It's just we don't notice it. The label is what we notice. So something to contemplate and practice. And when we practice meditation, in many ways, we are practicing right view by letting go of labels as they arise, critiques, notions, reactions. We let go of each of those things in turn to come back to something that is in the present, which happens to be our breath in this case. Because, and I invite you to try this, however, no matter how hard you try, you will not be able to breathe in the past or breathe in the future. You can only breathe now. So when your attention is resting on the breath, as we will practice in meditation, and I'll explain that in detail when we get to it, you're practicing resting your attention on the present moment, which is the very foundation of right view. So something to practice, certainly. From right view naturally springs right intention. Because when we see things clearly, what we intend to accomplish is a match with reality. So that's always preferable. And here, right intention has to do with always pondering the question, what will alleviate suffering? For others, certainly, for myself, for the world. What will alleviate suffering? And sometimes what will alleviate suffering is you got to shut it down and take a nap and recuperate and regain your strength, because you can't help others when you're at wit's end. Sometimes what will alleviate suffering is calling out injustice skillfully. Sometimes what will alleviate suffering is a warm embrace. Sometimes what will alleviate suffering is running for political office. It could be any of these things. It could be just listening and being there. All of these things have the capacity to alleviate suffering if they are a match with what is really going on, which you know because you have right view. It can be very hard to know how to set our intention, although there are countless beings who advise you to set your intention. And then everything will flow from that. And on one hand, that's true, I think. But on the other hand, it's magical thinking. I'm going to set the intention to be successful. I hope you will be. I hope I will be. That's an intention many people share, many of us. But that's not quite enough. Or I'm going to set the intention to not get upset about this thing that actually is really upsetting. So I would say, cool, you could experiment with all of those things. But my experience of right intention is, what is the closest match with my own heart right now? So it has much more to do with authenticity in the moment than a hoped-for outcome in the future. And trust me, I have billions of hoped-for outcomes in the future. And I work just like you, I'm sure. I work really hard on accomplishing those things. But right intention is actually something that arises in the moment, this moment, and this moment, and this moment. So it's not like saying, I hope this will happen in the future. I'll give you an example. This was a long time ago. I had the opportunity to do a project with someone who was pretty famous, to produce a project for them. And I was like, I had just started working on my own. I was newly self-employed, and I thought, ew, this could be really good for myself, which is not a bad thing to think. So don't get me wrong. I'm kind of teasing myself when I say that. This would be really good for me. Good for my business, good for my brand, good for my bank account, blah, 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 blah. One problem, I don't like this person. I don't like what they say and do in the world. Uh-oh. So what's more important here? What's the right thing to do? So I was talking to my own meditation teacher, who has been my own meditation teacher, by the way, for more than 25 years. So thank you, my own meditation teacher. Brilliant. I get teary when I think about him. Gift to me, you have been. Anyway, I was telling him about it, and he said, well, the most important thing is to do it with the right intention. Whatever you do, make sure you have the right intention. And it would be easy to think he meant, oh, honor your morals and be righteous. But he did. That's not what he meant. Because the next sentence was the kicker. He said, the most important thing is to move forward with the right intention. And then it doesn't matter. So confounding. If the result manifests in the heaven realm or the hell realm, which is a Buddhist way of saying it doesn't matter if the result is good for you or bad for you. If you have planted the seed of right intention, whatever blossoms will be for your benefit and the benefit of others. Doesn't mean it's going to feel good or turn out the way you want. But spiritually and karmically, it will be meaningful. So of course, I really wanted it to turn out the way I wanted it to. And also, P.S., I hope it will be good karmically. But that was interesting. It's the right intention in this moment. Plant that seed, and then what blossoms is unknown. But you can have faith in it. So P.S., I didn't do the project, because I didn't think I could sleep at night if I did. Anyway, that was a long time ago, and I'm happy with the decision I made. So when we look in to right view in this moment, as opposed to what I hope for in the future, if you're anything like me, what you will encounter is a truckload of feelings. Desperation. Owning it, y'all. Love. Got to own that too. Fear, anger, resentment, all of these things are could be in any moment, together or separately. And so when I look to see, well, what is my intention, they can cloud things. Because often we set an intention that's based in very strong emotion. I'm really sad, I'm really angry, I'm really afraid. So let me set an intention to go somewhere else. And I hope you will. So the first thing that comes to me to also address in this contemplation of right intention is, where do my strong feelings fit into this? And are they verboten? Like, should I not have them? because Buddhist people seem to be very serene and so on? Or is there something truthful going on that I should pay attention to? Buddhist lady said it has something to do with being authentic. So I'm authentically pissed off right now. I'm authentically hopeful and long have a lot of longing for thus and such. Is that what I should pay attention to? So the answer is, I don't know. However, I will tell you that there's sort of three ways to look at how to work with strong emotions, which in our world are really a thing that must be encountered. In every world, in every period in time, these things, rage and fear and so on, had to be encountered by countless individuals, every individual, in fact. But many of the teachings in the Buddhist path, brilliant and vast, and probably delivered by people who lived in a more monastic kind of life than you and me. We're not monastics. We're householders. Our practice is our home and our relationships and our bank account and our work and our environment. That's what we practice with. So that's likely to rouse more emotions, more unsteady than a monastic life. So what do we do here when we encounter strong emotions? So I'm just trying to decide how much detail to go into. So three schools of thought, all correct, and all different from each other. So the first school of thought says when you encounter what is called an afflictive emotion, anger is perhaps the most afflictive because it creates the most aggression and violence, but fear is also afflictive, and anxiety is afflictive, and sorrow and grief and depression could be considered afflictive, meaning they don't feel good. What to do? How do I set my intention when I also have all of these feelings? So the first view, as I say, is to say, oh yeah, you know what? Those emotions are afflictive and I should try to get rid of them. And when I listen to people teaching meditation or spiritual things, this is traditionally the most popular view of strong emotion. Don't have them. Try. Of course, you're going to have them, so work with them. Don't be trapped by them. Release them. Don't be so attached. That's just your ego. I hate that, by the way. And when people say, don't be so attached, that always makes me a little confounded, because what they're saying is, instead of being attached, attach yourself to non-attachment, which is a little bit of a, you know, problem, but I'm digressing. But sure, if you are riddled with rage, if you struggle with depression, anxiety, you should do whatever you can to sort the situation and to find some balance and peace and relief for yourself, 100%. That is one way of looking at strong emotions. It's entirely accurate, and it's very easy to misconstrue as, oh, I'm just going to be all zen all the time. That's not what it means. But okay, that's the first one. Set that one aside. The second view of strong emotions says, oh, well, okay, maybe they're afflictive, but they're also useful, because when I tune in and understand and feel the particular pain of my anger, my depression, my fear, that gives me something in my arsenal of compassion. Because when I meet someone in the future who is angry, depressed, anxious, afraid, for the same reasons that I am, I will have a much greater capacity to demonstrate compassion towards them than I would have otherwise. So what I feel that's difficult is actually a gateway. It's a bridge between me and you, so that when I contemplate or feel my own sorrow, let's say, over this particular situation or that, and then I talk to someone who has the same sorrow, my heart goes out to them. Literally, it feels like my heart goes out to them. We share a heart. So the strong emotions are not necessarily to be got rid of, but to be examined and held in a gentle embrace for their utility in extending compassion to your fellow humans. That's a good one too. And then the third view of strong emotions is maybe they're afflictive and they can be of benefit in the future by helping me feel more compassion towards others. But there's a third piece here that really is worth examining. And that third piece says, whatever you think is a strong, bad, negative emotion, No. That emotion is actually a form of wisdom masked. Anger masks clarity. You can't be angry and sleepy at the same time. So when you're angry, you're sharp and awake. And if you can work with that to separate it from damaging actions and words, you're a master. I can't do it. There are very few anger masters in the world, but they're out there. People who can use anger as a wake-up call for you, not for themselves. Rare, but true. Sorrow masks compassion, is a mask of compassion, because when you're sad and down in the dumps, you're also open and raw. And raw means you feel everything. When you feel everything, you can be compassionate toward everyone. So the anger, sorrow, painful, but they're also whole. They also hold within themselves the seeds of these other very skillful activities, clarity and compassion. Anxiety can be a mask for skillful action. Because when you're anxious, you often, although anxiety can look like any one of a million things, but it is sometimes or often accompanied by, what am I going to do? I should do this. I should do that. What if this happens? What if that goes over there? What if? Why didn't I say this? Should have said that. So you're looking for action. And that can be very useful when you separate it from, oh, it'll never work out, or I'm a loser, or no, you're a loser. All the things that often accompany anxiety. Underneath anxiety is fear. And fear itself is a kind of attunement. On the on bad days, it's hypervigilance. And on good days, it's hyper-awareness. So this is very broadly explained, but I want to give some examples, good or bad as they may be, of how you can look at afflictive emotion, strong emotion, as masked forms of wisdom. So when we go in and look for our, I want to set the right intention, it's not law of attraction-y magic kind of thinking. It's the right intention for now, for this decision, for this project, for this conversation. So you constantly, one is constantly looking within to set and reset the right intention, because it's not like you set it, it's like one and done. You set it and then you check and you set it again and you set it again, always with the underlying quest. What will alleviate suffering? What will alleviate suffering is always the right intention. And as I say, in encountering that wish to set the right intention, we often find a sea of emotion. And what I suggest, the view of it as afflictive, as a bridge to compassion, or as a form of wisdom masked, my hope in saying these things is to give you a way to encounter that inner storm that we all see to one degree or another when we look within and hope to set the right intention. So I hope that's useful. In 2 weeks will come the third video, which is on the third and my personal favorite along the Eightfold Path, which is right speech. Y'all, we really need some right speech in our world. So I'll look forward to examining right speech with you in the next few weeks. In the meantime, if you want to go back and look at right view or look at it for the first time, great. These meditations that are in these videos, I warmly invite you to use them. You can use them every day. You can use them never day, as you wish. And just begin to bring attention to your own experience. This is actually the most important thing I could ever say. Your own personal experience of right view and right intention. As you go into any situation, am I seeing clearly? Am I, which means am I here, not am I thinking about what's here? And is my intention to alleviate suffering? And that could mean anything. What does it mean right now? And right now, and right now, and right now. So I hope that's useful. Do tell. Let me know in comments. And I look forward to talking to you in a few weeks about right speech, my favorite, as I mentioned. So let's sit together. Begin your practice by taking a good seat, which means sit up straight, with a sense of dignity and upliftedness, and relax. Your legs can be crossed loosely in front of you, or if you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor. And let the hands rest palms down, just above the knee or somewhere mid-thigh that feels comfortable. Like you're not propping yourself up or holding yourself up, they're just resting. And let yourself feel heavy from the waist down, rooted and strong, and light and responsive from the waist up. Let the belly soften a lot. And let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed because you don't have to talk. And if you look in, you see there actually is no one in there talking. It is quiet. So notice your own inner silence and let yourself fill with it. And enjoy it. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, which means there's no breathing technique. However, your breathing is fine. In this practice, the eyes remain open and the gaze is cast down to a spot in front, up to 6 feet or 2 meters or whatever feels comfortable given the distance of your screen. And let there be a sense that you're receiving through the eyes rather than seeking through the eyes. So the eyes are very soft. Let the forehead relax. Now let your attention rest on the breath, which doesn't mean notice the breath, it means feel the breath. Feel the gentle expansion, the taking in of the inhale, and the letting go of the exhale. Just feel it. The attention rests on the breath as it would, as your body would on a hammock. So your attention swings in on the in-breath and out on the out-breath. And your mind is just carried, swayed by the hammock of your breath. So you can really let go. Your mind will continue to think thoughts because that's what it does. It's not a problem. It's no big deal. It's fine. No effort to, quote, clear the mind of thought. Absolutely unnecessary and also kind of impossible. So just let your thoughts be as they are. They're like blah, blah, blah in the background. You don't have to do anything about those thoughts. They'll come and go on their own, I promise. And at some point, you may notice that you've become absorbed in a line of thought to the point where you've completely forgotten about your breath. Good, okay. Excellent thing to notice. Now we want to do something very subtle. First, notice that. Label it thinking. That's thinking, different than meditating. Then let go. And the letting go is very soft. Like you're opening a closed fist and letting a pebble drop into a pond. It just, poof, goes. Gently come back to your breath and begin again with this inhale, this exhale. So this is our practice, and we'll sit together in silence for a few minutes until you hear a gong. Thank you so much for your practice. It's important. Thank you so much for practicing with me. I appreciate it. And thank you for practicing together. Somewhere, someone in the world just sat with you. And I'm very grateful to be in this community with you right now. See you in a few weeks.